Hello, and thanks for joining us for this week's Big Boat interview. In this episode, I caught up with Steve Sidwell, owner of the 34-metre Westport Ashente. Steve is a particularly well-travelled owner, and he shared with me some of his many adventures along the Pacific coast. He's also owned over 20 yachts of different shapes and sizes over his lifetime, so he was able to spill a few top tips for buyers, as well as disclose a really exciting new yacht that he's working on right now. Hi, Steve. Thanks for joining me. We've taken a few attempts to get here, so thank you for making the time. Where are you at the moment? Are you on board a boat or are you on land?
Yes, I'm on board Ashente in Victoria, BC at the moment. Yes.
Wow. Okay.
And I'll just add there, I don't know if this is good or bad. You can edit this out later, but I'm actually hosting a super yacht forum event on Ashente that is promoting the Pacific coast.
So you fantastic. Want me to say all that? Yeah, definitely. I mean, maybe that's a good place to start. You know, I had some other questions prepared, but why are you interested in the Pacific coast particularly, and what are you hoping to get out of your forum?
Yeah, so what the forum is all about is bringing kind of the international super yacht community more awareness of what an incredible coast we have and what an incredible boating area it is. I've not traveled all over the world myself, but I've heard many people that have say that this is possibly the most beautiful place in the world for yachting. And so that's the idea behind the Super Yacht Forum, is just to bring a little more awareness to the incredible BC and Alaska coast.
I mean, every time I hear an owner's stories from there, it looks incredible to me. I mean, the scenery and the wildlife. I don't know, what are your favorite places to go around there, and how much of it have you explored? Would you say you know it pretty well?
I would say I know the area pretty well. We've spent, I would say, you know, probably maybe even close to a year actually out on the coast on our boat over the last 5 years, and you know, 4 or 5 months at a time, and from Vancouver to Alaska. And I would say our favorite place is definitely the Great Bear Rainforest. The Great Bear Rainforest is spectacular. You have these fjordland that, you know, goes from the ocean to 5,000 foot mountains. They're granite, they're all black granite mountains, and water cascading down to the ocean, waterfalls everywhere. In the background, you can see the glaciers. So it's all glacier water coming down. And the wildlife, as you said, is absolutely spectacular in that area.
And why do you think more owners don't go there? Do you feel like it's a bit of a secret, or do you think actually more and more people are coming each year?
I think both. Slowly people are coming, but you really need to know the waters. I mean, the waters can be very dangerous, very treacherous. There's, you know, huge tides, 15-foot tides. Certain areas that you go to, you could easily have 10 or 15 knot currents. And so, you know, I think that it's probably intimidating for most captains, most boats. But, you know, the key thing there is just make sure you have a captain on board that is very familiar with the waters. And if they are, then it can be very safe and it can be phenomenal.
Sounds like great advice. Well, we'll maybe touch on that further later. But I wanted to sort of start with the beginning and ask a bit more about your background and how you came to yachting, because I read that your childhood was spent quite far from the coast. And so I wondered, you know, when you're not growing up seeing boats every day like some of our Italian friends, what makes you want to get into it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I grew up on a ranch in the interior of BC that at the time was one of the largest ranches in the world. And so it was all about wide open spaces. It was over 1 million acres, and roaming the ranges. And so it was very free. And it was this, you know, it was, you were always in touch with nature, but in this wide open space. And so I actually didn't go on my first kind of yachting trip till I was about 22 or 23 years old. And a friend of mine chartered a boat from Vancouver, and we went up the BC coast to Desolation Sound. And I absolutely fell in love with the whole yachting experience. It was only a 45-foot boat. But on the way back, I said to my friend, I am going to have a yacht. I'm going to have a boat bigger than this one. And he said, yeah, sure. I was very young at the time. And the next year, he went out with me on my brand new boat. So that's how I came about yachting. And then probably since then, I don't know, I probably owned 15 to 20 different yachts over 50 feet, and many smaller than that. And yeah, just love boating on the BC coast.
And when you're talking about the ranch and this kind of, great expanse of space and freedom, do you see many similarities between that and being out on the ocean, or do you think really they're quite different things?
No, I think it's very similar. It's like you're out on the range. In that case, you were typically riding a horse, and I consider this my land yacht, because it's this wide open space, and the freedom that you get from yachting, especially in this area. And then all of our tenders and our jet skis and all that, and the kayaks and paddle boards. It's a very similar experience. And you're really, I'm going to say, one with nature. And especially in the Great Bear Rainforest, where there's, very little civilization. The civilization is far in between. And so it's not about, as you said, growing up Italian and the Mediterranean coast, or Mediterranean yachting. It is more about communing with nature and family. The whales and the grizzly bears and the eagles, they don't care about, who has the nicest Gucci bag. It's not about that at all. It is all about being one with nature. And that's the feeling that I get, my family get. I mean, every chance we get, we're out on the coast as a family. And it's a re and we don't even have, believe it or not, we do not have satellite TV. I don't want, none of us want TV on the boat. So it's 100% nature and family when we're out.
That sounds fantastic to me. When you're talking about kind of closeness with nature, I wonder, have you ever had any kind of close brushes with wildlife coming up to the boat, or any kind of hairy encounters when you've been exploring on shore? Because it can be a bit of a double-edged sword, this getting up close and personal with nature.
Yes, well, we've had many experiences that were hair-raising with bears and actually whales. I'll give you one example with a whale. We are cruising along in our 30-foot tender, and my daughter is driving. It's perfectly flat morning. It's probably like 7 o'clock in the morning. We're actually going to go to this hot springs that we had never explored before, and we're cruising along at about 30 knots. And all of a sudden, a whale jumped right in front of us, a full breach, gray whale right in front of us. And all of us thought we were going to hit the whale. And she just cranked the wheel as hard as she could, and somehow we missed it. And it was just absolutely flat calm. Visibility was as long as you could be, and all of a sudden that jumped in front of us and gave us all a heart attack. And yeah, exactly. We've had lots of very cool bear experiences. Ashley, my wife, at one point, we just watched a Disney bear movie the night before, and she was feeling how safe and secure bears were. And we're out paddling along on our paddle boards, and we see a grizzly bear right along the shore. So she just paddles right up to it. I'm not exaggerating when I say at least 50 feet from it. And I was, a couple hundred feet from it, and I yelled at Ashley. I said, "Ashley, get out of there. That guy decides to attack, he can get you in a minute, in a second. So get out of there." And so we've been up close to many, many bears, lots of whales. In that area, you typically would say see whales, maybe even two or three times a day. Every day you're gonna see whales, and every other day you're gonna see grizzly bears. So yeah, we've had lots of up close and scary moments with wildlife.
And how about the weather out there? Because presumably you're not kind of lounging around on deck, sort of sunbathing, reading books. Like, have you had any particularly tough conditions? And, you know, you mentioned you have to have a good captain. Is your captain able to cope with everything that that area has to throw at you?
That's a really good question. So you have to be prepared for horrible conditions. There's no doubt about it. You do get amazing days. You get beautiful, warm days that, you know, is, you know, beach-like conditions. And you're going to spend other days where you've got to have, you know, good warm weather gear. And yes, on one trip to the Haida Gwaii area, it's called, we were in bad weather for about 3 weeks. And so in that scenario, we were just kind of, you know, every time there was a little break in the weather, the wind settled down, we would jump to the next harbor and jump to the next harbor, anchorage. There's no marinas in that area. So it's just jump to the next anchorage. And so you have to be very careful. There's no doubt about it. You do not go out, at least we do not go out when weather conditions are bad. We stay in a nice, warm, cozy anchorage and don't risk anything like that. And so we never try to guarantee that we're going to be in a location at a certain time. We always say, okay, we're going to be plus or minus a few days based on weather.
Absolutely. I think that's the only sensible thing to do is to kind of go with the flow. I've heard a few horror stories of captains with kind of very demanding owners who want to go somewhere in a certain place at a certain time. And they learn the hard way when they kind of try and go against what Mother Nature had planned. You mentioned 15 to 20 boats, and it sounds like you've owned a lot of boats. So I wondered that over the years, is there a builder or designer who stands out to you as particularly good in your experience, or are there any kind of builders that you're particularly loyal to and that you think are true to their stereotype?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. It's, for me, it's not so much about the builder. It's actually the designer, the naval architect. And for me, it's the local favorite. It's Greg Marshall. I love Greg Marshall's work. The most recent Artifact, I think that is just a crazy beautiful boat. Yeah. And he's done so many other kind of leading edge yachts. And so he's my favorite by far. And then, you know, then from there, it's okay. Now we've designed the boat. Now, what builder would you want to build it?
And I sort of wondered, yeah, having probably had a lot of different sort of interesting quirks on these different boats, if you were designing your own fantasy yacht where cost is no limit, Greg's on board, you can have whatever you want on board, what are your kind of must-have features? And they can be as out there as you want, or they can be practical things.
Well, for me, first of all, it's bulletproof systems. It's bulletproof systems because when you're boating where we go, you're flying in parts and it's hard. If anything goes wrong, man, you're stuck in the middle of nowhere. And so it's all about bulletproof systems. And so for me, it's not having the latest and greatest in technology. It's more about having, okay, are the parts on tugboats? Are they on freighters? Are they extremely proven parts? And if they are, then we'll select them for our boat. If they're leading edge, I don't want to take the risk of something going wrong. And, you know, in Ascente, it's older. None of our older parts have actually broken down. We've only ever had parts or issues with new parts. And that was where I learned this thing. The previous owner had that mentality of, you know, tugboat, freighter, parts. And those are the ones that have really stayed. So this is probably not what the industry wants to hear, but it's how I would want to start building a yacht for our purpose, which is bulletproof parts. And then for me, it's all about the glass. You know, it's as much glass. It's floor to ceiling, bow to stern, glass. Because as you're cruising along in these areas, it is so beautiful. And I want to maximize those views. And when we're sitting at anchor, it's like you're sitting in heaven. And so I want to be able to see all of it. And, you know, most of the time when we're out yachting, there are no other signs of civilization. There's no other boats. There's no other signs of civilization. So when you're sitting in anchor like that, and it's floor to ceiling glass, it's really remarkable. So you're nice and warm inside, and it can be really rough conditions outside, but it's a wonderful feeling. So those would be my two first things is bulletproof systems and as much glass as possible.
Yeah, I'm not surprised you like Artifact because that obviously had some very distinctive kind of glass all around, and was a Greg Marshall, as you say. But let's talk a bit about Ascenta then. You've probably told this story 100 times before, but how did you come to buy her? Was it an easy process? How did the negotiations go? Are you pleased with how it all went, or still thinking, what have I done?
Yeah, exactly. Great question. So I had been looking for a yacht for maybe 2 years, and the Med and Monaco yacht show, and of course Fort Lauderdale, and didn't really find anything that quite worked for me. And then I saw Ascente and a little ad on Yacht World, and it was in Vancouver, and I didn't know the boat, and I was shocked. And so I called the broker and went and saw it, and it was in really bad condition at that point. The previous owners had not maintained it well. They hadn't actually used it for about 10 years, or very little use for about 10 years. That's why I didn't know it. And the boat had gotten away from them, so it didn't look very good. And I walked on board, and about 5, 7 minutes in, I went, I'm gonna buy this boat. If this boat, exactly, if this boat is technically sound, then it passes a survey, I'm buying this boat. And the reason being is it had so many unique features that I just loved. It's a really open layout. So the previous owner had designed it for the BC coast, which is much glass. His attitude is no matter where he's sitting on the yacht, he wants to be able to see the incredible view. And so it's very open, lots of glass everywhere, and I love that. And then as I went through, he told me about the bulletproof systems that he tried to design into it. He tried to design it for very little crew, and I like that as well. And so I then put an offer. He rejected the offer. He had another buyer, but the other buyer didn't close. I put in another offer. That buyer didn't close. So third time, and the price actually went down each time. The third offer I put in, I eventually got it, and that whole thing took about 9, 10 months to acquire it, and I closed on the boat. Used it for about 3 or 4 months during the summer, and went, you know what? It's everything and more than I had hoped for. And so then we went on a 2 year quest to refit it. We did a complete exterior and interior refit. Pretty well everything you see is new, other than the engines and some of the other mechanical systems. And we did the exterior the first winter. We only did the refit work in the winter time, so that we could be boating. In April, we said, everybody, drop your tools. We're going boating, and that's why it took 2 years to do it. We did the exterior the first winter, and then the interior the second winter, and it worked out, so well. Using it and doing the refit also worked out well, because then we could tweak every little thing that we wanted. And yeah, I'm thrilled with how the whole experience has been. And I love the journey too. A lot of people would say, oh, it's really tough doing a refit like this. I actually acted as our general contractor. My son, 2 sons were the project managers on it. So we had a ton of fun doing the refit work as well.
And which part of the refit was the most challenging for you? Was there a bit that you kind of agonized over, or that you thought, God, I really hope we get this right because it's so important to me that it is?
I would probably say every part of it was like that. But I would say probably the number one thing that has brought me the most joy is the color, the blue color. So when I was doing the refit, so this was now back 8 years ago, this particular color, this blue color, to my knowledge, had never been done before. And everybody said, "Oh, you shouldn't do that. That's not going to work out very well. That blue metallic, I don't think you should do it. It's going to show all the imperfections, and it's very hard to do a blue metallic, and it's going to be known as the blue boat and everything." And I kind of went and said, "You know what? And how I'd come to fall in love with it, I'd seen it on a Riva boat a few years earlier in the Monaco Yacht Show, and it was just like a 20-foot runabout." And I went, "Wow, that is a really cool color." So I took a photo of it, and then I had the shipyard work with the paint supplier to try and match the color. And they tried about half a dozen different tries. And each one I said, no, I don't really like that. And you got to have a little bit more metallic. You got to do it this way." And then they got it right. And they did it on a little square board. And I looked at it inside and went, "Wow, this is pretty cool." And then I took it outside in the sun, and I twisted it in the different ways, and I saw how it could shine in the different, how the colors changed in the different sunlight. And I went, "This is perfect. This is exactly what I want." And everybody went, "Okay, I don't think it's a good idea, but okay." And then when, of course, when in the shipyard, you can't see it because you're inside and you can't get a background. So even when it's painted, you can't really see if it looks good or not. And so the boat is then coming out of the shipyard in the first day, and gets a few feet out, and I'm actually up in a cherry picker. I'm looking down at it, and comes out about 10 feet, and I go, "I think it looks good. I think it looks okay." Out about a third of the way, "I think it's gonna look good." Halfway, I'm jumping and dancing in the cherry picker. It looks fantastic. I love it. So that was probably the most frustrating and rewarding part for me, because others just didn't think it was gonna work, and I was pretty determined, and it works fantastic. That is without a doubt the number one compliment that we get on the boat is the color.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a fortune favors the bold in your case, and it was worth the risk. Is
Exactly.
it a boat that gets a lot of attention? I mean, it sounds like you're very often in quite isolated places. When you go to busier marinas and things, is it a boat that, people crowd around and ask you questions about?
Well, in this area, yes, because it is very unique, and it's larger for this area because we don't have that many large boats. I'm sure in the Med it wouldn't get any attention whatsoever. Here we get a lot of attention and lots of boats circling us when we're at anchor and whatnot, and commenting on, "Hey, great boat, love the color," so on and so forth. But in the Med, it would be, just another boat, I'm sure.
And going back to talk about Alaska a bit, and then kind of that area of the world, I've heard that that can be quite difficult. And I heard it from an owner who was trying to travel during the pandemic, when everything was twice as hard for everyone, at least. But I've heard it can be quite challenging in terms of the permits and the paperwork and things like that. Is that something you've found? And if so, what are your kind of tips for navigating that?
Yes, I think it is quite difficult, but it's really just about the getting the right agent. If you get the right agent there that knows everything, they can easily walk you through all of it. And the fees are quite reasonable. So I think it's just to just get the right agent, and you will not have any issues whatsoever.
That sounds like strong advice. And when you're talking about kind of, I think it's quite natural when you're talking about areas of natural beauty and incredible wildlife and things, you do start thinking about the environmental perspective. Is there anything about how you travel, or how you, when you charter the boat, how you ask other guests to travel when you're in those areas to try and sort of limit your impact and to be a responsible owner, kind of appreciating the environment for what it is and preserving it?
Yeah, without a doubt. I think it's so critical that all of us boaters think in that mindset. And I really love the way the whole industry is headed with more sustainable yachting measures, more electric motors rather than less, and hybrid systems. So I think that's where it starts. We try to really think through whenever we drop the anchor, what impact are we going to have? A good muddy bottom is really what we're heading for, because it's not going to have any impact. And so that. And then, for us, it's very much about respecting the wildlife. So, not roaring around where all the wildlife is going to be, trying to be as quiet as possible. Literally whispering rather than even talking. And so to really respect the wildlife, because if they're disturbed, they're we're going to lose that. You know, they're just going to go a mile further into the wilderness, and we'll never see them on the shores. So I think that that's critically important. And then for me in my next boat, it's going to be about CO2 emissions. How do we reduce the CO2 emissions as much as I possibly can? Every time I start our engines here and I see a little bit of smoke coming out, I go, wish I had the electric right now. So, yeah. And I'm thinking actually if even doing a refit of a Sente and putting in electric motors. So,
really?
Yeah. Yeah, there's just now starting to be some packages that are available where you could do a refit with electric motors. And so I want to explore that a little bit more. If it hadn't been for the pandemic, I probably would have done it already. And now the yards are so busy, it's hard to even get attention or space. But as soon as I can, I'm probably going to do that.
And I've heard that from a lot of people as well, that all the yards are kind of, full up. It's very difficult to get work done at the moment because everyone's either producing new boats or refitting people's current boats. Are you finding it difficult to get kind of standard maintenance and the kind of things you would normally do on a bit of a rolling schedule done? Or is that not really an issue where you are in the world?
No, it's very much an issue. I would say that is one challenge with this area is we do not have, sufficiently trained people here to be able to handle the demand, and where the demand is getting greater and greater. So I think that is a big challenge for this region. And yeah, I would have done, a multi-million dollar additional kind of new refit of a Sente 2 years ago, had the pandemic hit and all the problems. And now I look at it and go, guys, they're booked out 1 and 2 years. So I'm probably, 3-4 years overdue, not overdue because we maintain it well, but I would have liked to have done it way, way earlier.
Yeah. And you mentioned kind of a Freudian slip just now. You said, my next boat. Is a new boat on the cards, or are you really just looking at kind of tweaking a Sente to keep her on board?
No, actually, a new boat is definitely in the cards. Greg Marshall and I had already been working on a Sente 2.
People can't see this, but I can see a very nice picture of a boat in a frame. So clearly on your mind.
Yeah, exactly.
Right in pride of place.
Exactly. Yes. So we've been working on that, and it reflects all of the things that we had mentioned earlier, as much glass as possible and many other things as well. So yeah, it's definitely in the cards. I think I'll probably try to do both, do an Sente refit and build the new one, because I'm not sure that I would even sell a Sente. I might just continue on. A Sente has been a really popular charter boat, so I might just keep it and continue in the charter with the Sente 1.
Mm. And a Sente 2, is she a similar size, or are you looking at something a bit bigger?
A bit bigger. So a Sente 1 is 34. We would go to 40 meters. And the reason being is that's how big my slip can handle in Vancouver. It's very difficult to get moorage in Vancouver. And so my slip can handle a max of 40 meters. And so that's what we're building to. And that's also a really good size for this area as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about it a lot recently, but we've seen a lot of growth around that area, kind of 35 to 50 meters. And I think actually for the kind of travel that you like doing, for kind of exploring and going to remote places and things, it's the perfect size, because the bigger you get, the more unwieldy the boat becomes to move around. And then you find yourself spending all your time on a tender or a support vessel or whatever, rather than actually on your yacht. So that seems like a very sensible choice for you.
Yeah, exactly. And we've now had, 8 years of boating in this area and all of the equipment on and off. So how do we get the all the tenders and the jet skis and the kayaks and the paddle boards? How do we get all of that on and off the boat as fast as we possibly can to get it in the water? Because that's the, you know, we get to an area and all the toys got to go in the water as fast as possible. So with the Sente 2, we've thought through all of those things. How can we make it easier, faster? How can we handle more equipment? And with all of that equipment comes all of the additional gear and equipment, you know, vests and paddles and on and on and on. So another big part of a Sente 2 is storage for all of that gear and easy access to all of that gear. And then we also pull, we pull our tender, and so we're going to do kind of an auto towing system on the new boat as well. And it'll be a landing craft, so we can, you know, bring our motorcycles, our electric bikes, all of that sort of stuff, even snowmobiles. You know, we're even going to be able to carry snowmobiles in the next vessel. So we can go out in the winter time, put them on the landing craft, go to shore, and go off exploring in the winter in the snow.
Wow. Well, I mean, I hope you'll be the first to tell us about it when it's finally kind of when we're allowed to take a peek. But it sounds like you're pretty kind of wedded to that area. Do you ever think, oh, you know, I wish I was going around the Bahamas or Bermuda or the Caribbean, or have you done that in the past and you've moved on from it? Or is it something that could come up in the future?
Well, how we really see ourselves is chartering in those areas. You know, we've done some boating in those various areas, and we just see it more as chartering in those areas. This is our home, you know, territory, if you will. So it'll probably stay, you know, here for the most part. Maybe we'll do some shorter trips, but the idea is you know, chartering the Med, the Caribbean, you know, South Pacific, so on and so forth.
Yeah. And so you mentioned a lot your family. Do you all, you know, you have kids, they all come yachting with you all the time. And do you think that will continue? Do you plan to kind of, as they get older, keep on with the family holidays? Or do you think at one point they're going to go off and have their own yachts?
I think one, they will have their own yachts, but we'll still be doing it together. I have to be probably the luckiest father in the world, because you know, my last birthday, I asked the kids, you know, what would they like to see of their dad? And all three said the same thing: more time together. Yet we spend every holiday together. We work together as well. And every boating trip we're together. And yet they still want to spend more time with me. It's kind of crazy. So, but we spend, they love yachting every bit as much as I do. And they're not here right now, and they're all choked. I'm out on this trip by myself, or not by myself, but with guests, and they're disappointed they can't be here with us. If I say we're going boating tomorrow, we're going for a week, they're going to do everything they possibly can to figure out how to join.
Well, that's wonderful. It's great that you can kind of keep that going. And how is it working with family? You hear horror stories about kind of working with your, you know, working with your kids, working with your father. Do you all get on okay?
We get along amazingly well. And maybe the reason being is none of them report to me. So they all report to different parts of the company. We do spend a lot of time over dinners and whatnot talking about it. But we have a lot of family members in the company. But the rule is you can't report to the family member.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense for everyone's sanity.
Yeah, exactly.
So where's next then? It sounds like you've got so much going on. So you've got another boat kind of in the works to begin building soon, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be at least a year before we get the package out to the builders for a quote, and then, you know, 2 to 3 years post that. So it's probably 3 to 5 years before the next one comes along. And in the short term, it would be hopefully a quick refit of a Sente 1. And, you know, continue doing exactly what we do, just enjoying every part of our boating experience and charting here in these waters, and then chartering in other areas.
Okay, well, I have two final questions then, which I feel like I always ask people, but I'm always interested in the answers. Over all your adventures on all your boats, I wondered, you know, it's impossible probably, but what is the greatest day that you remember and you have a kind of pinch me moment that you think, wow, what an amazing day that was. I'll never forget that.
Yeah. So yeah, I've got a lot of those, but I certainly have one that jumps to mind right away. We're in the Great Bear Rainforest. We're at anchor. I get up very early. I get up 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, and I have my coffee. And we're at this beautiful anchorage all by ourselves. Huge waterfalls cascading down behind me, and it's just an absolute picture perfect moment. And I thought, you know what? I should do my coffee from the hot tub this morning. So I do. I take my coffee, I go up to the hot tub, which is on our top deck, and I'm sitting there and just absolute bliss. And I hear this, and I, oh, that's a whale spout. And so I stand up and I look around and I can't see it. I can't see it. I must be imagining these things. So I sit back down and it's cold. It's really cold. And I sit back down in the hot tub and I'm sitting there sipping again. And I hear the same thing. Oh, it's got to be a whale. I stand up again and look around and can't see anything again. Third time this happens, and aha, this is a small pod of whales that are circling the boat. And
Wow.
exactly, this is like now 5:30 in the morning, and I'm just sitting on the edge of the hot tub, and there's three whales circling the boat. And 5, 10 minutes go by, and I got to wake everybody up. So I go downstairs and I wake everybody up, and everybody comes out in their bathrobes. And here we are watching the whales just circling Ascente, and then they start to drift off, and so we all jump in the tender and we just kind of follow them, and we watch them for maybe 45 minutes. Everybody had their coffee and their bathrobes, and there's probably about 8 or 10 of us out there on the tender on our in our bathrobes. And yeah, that was a moment none of us will forget.
Sounds really amazing. And there's something about being in your dressing gown, which is also very good.
Yeah, exactly. Watching whales in your dressing gowns at 6 o'clock in the morning, sipping your coffee in your tender. That's a pretty cool moment.
It's not a bad start to the day, is
Exactly.
it? And then my last question was just if you've ever had any kind of funny stories from your years of boating. We've heard everything from stories about pirates to corrupt customs officials to owners managing to crash their own boats or gets the anchor stuck. Have you ever got in any scrapes over your time?
Oh, we've got in a few scrapes. There's been no doubt about that. This is that same trip that we were on, 3 weeks in bad weather. We could see on the charts, we could see this look like a perfect little anchorage. It was completely protected. There was one small entrance into the anchorage, and good mountain cover all around. And we just kept thinking, gosh, if we could get to there, that could be a really good place where we could hang out for a few days. So we get there, and sure enough, it is this, perfect little cocoon. The water is flat calm. Just outside, it's, 4, 5, 6 foot seas. We get here, it's just flat calm. And it's so beautiful. There's a waterfall just over there. So we get anchored, all the toys come out immediately. And it's just, we let our guard down. Typically, we're in those conditions. We always bring the toys in at night. We don't leave them out just in case. But this is the perfect little cocoon. We left all the toys out. And about 11 o'clock at night, Ashley comes in and she says, "It's really weird. There's a whole bunch of birds on Ascente all over." And so I get up. Exactly, you know what's coming. And so we get up, and sure enough, there's birds everywhere. And maybe 10, 15 minutes later, this squall hits us. And it went from perfect calm seas to chaos in about 5, 10 minutes when the squall hit. So everybody gets up, and we immediately put on all of our life vests and start hauling the toys in, and the kayaks and tenders and jet skis are bouncing all over. Fortunately, we got everything in, And the anchor now, of course, is dragging at this point as well. So we're getting, you know, dangerously close to shore. So we, you know, pull the anchor and get up. And then, you know, we actually got out of there. We got out of there because we were such a small area. We didn't want to be confined in that conditions in such a small area. And so we get out to the open waters, and then we waited out the rest of the night in the storm out in the open waters. So I don't know that that's, we call it, you know, we would say it's funny at the moment now, but at the time, it was not funny at all. It was an exciting moment for us. So that would be the most exciting time that we've had, I would say, on Ascente.
Sounds fun. I'm hearing my mum's voice kind of ringing in my ears that you should always put your toys away before you go to bed. It's a lesson that rings true even when you have a yacht, hey?
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. And that was the thing is we would typically do that. Like, we always do that. But that night, we just, oh, it's perfect. No, it's not need, not necessary tonight. And that's the one time.
Always
that we
too
really
good to be true.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for chatting to me. You've made me want to go to an area that I've always wanted to go to even more. I hope your forum goes well, but you're the most amazing advocate for that part of the world. And yeah, it's definitely one on my bucket list. It looks beautiful.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I have honestly mixed emotions about telling people. On one hand, I love telling people all about how great it is and want people to come here and experience it. On the other hand, I don't want anybody to come here because I just want to keep it to ourselves.
Yeah, that's the eternal problem about sharing your secrets, isn't
right,
it?
Exactly.
Well, hopefully you won't be deluged after this podcast.
No, I'm sure that will be the case. It'll take people years to get here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you so much, Steve. Keep in touch, and we look forward to hearing about your new boat as and when.
Yes, my pleasure, and thank you so much. I really enjoyed, as always, always enjoyed chatting with you, so thank you for inviting me.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Big Boat Interview, which is a part of the Boat Briefing podcast. The program is mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen and is a production of Boat International Media. Tune in on Fridays to hear all the news from the world of super yachting and our special data reports. And don't forget to like and subscribe to make sure you never miss an episode. See you next time.